You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
All year we've heard, why aren't the crowds better at Bud Walton Arena? Well, you're finally going to get a great crowd tomorrow night when Arkansas hosts number 3 Alabama at 7:30 here in Fayetteville. This is going to be the hot ticket of the season so far. Arkansas, obviously, with those two big road wins in the last week at Kentucky and Texas, Alabama coming in a week off. The Crimson Tide, one of the very best teams in college basketball. They look like a Final Four contender, but you never know what might happen in any one game. Arkansas, obviously, they've had a great home court advantage here at Bud Walton Arena through the years, and we'll see if they can pull off a big upset tomorrow night. We're going to talk about that game today. We'll end the show with a Q&A with Logan Forsythe yesterday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club that was conducted by Chip Souza, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, we're joined by Anthony Christensen. He's on Zoom this morning. Anthony, how do you assess this game with Alabama tomorrow? I mean, what kind of chances do you think Arkansas has to pull an upset?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, Alabama is coming in 13 wins in its last 14 games. It's one loss, a home game against Ole Miss, in which it wasn't as good offensively as it typically is. So you've got an Alabama team that's coming in that's not just, you know, the number 3 team in the country, and it was one of the top 3 teams in the country preseason. A lot of people had them preseason number 1, including myself. It's a team that's playing really, really well and winning a lot of games against good teams. I mean, beating Mississippi State on the road, you know, kind of beat up on Georgia, beat Vanderbilt pretty good, put 100 on Kentucky. So, it's a good team. I'm expecting, like you said, a good crowd and everything. But, you know, it's a game that, you know, how do you assess Arkansas's upset chances? It's kind of hard to say because, you know, Arkansas has kind of struggled against higher level teams throughout the season. Obviously, you look at, you know, losing to Baylor and Illinois on neutral sites, and then the 0-5 start to SEC play, and so they have kind of struggled against, you know, those higher level teams. But then you look at, you know, now they're coming in 3 wins in 4 games, 1 on the road at Kentucky, and then obviously at Texas, but I don't really think any of those teams are on the same level as Alabama. So, yeah, there is a chance, when you get Bud Walton at its best, yeah, that's going to give you a great home court advantage. And I guess maybe you could say Alabama's due for a loss if you'd really want to put that out in the universe. But it'll be an exciting game for sure. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, the game plan, just because, you know, Alabama can fill it up with anybody. I mean, Alabama is one of the best shooting teams in the country, so it'll be a fun one to watch for sure.
This is what John Calipari had to say the other night. We don't have the clip, but I've got the quote. He said this on the Razorback Sports Network after beating Texas a couple of nights back in Austin. He said, quote, "We need our fans there early standing. Look, I've been in that building when it's nuts. I've been there. We need it nuts now. From here on in, we need it nuts because we're going to win. We're going to play hard games. But we've proven now in 2 tough places we can go on the road and win." And I think that, you know, I mean, the big question is, can they take that level of play that they've had on the road and bring it back to Bud Walton Arena? One of the really interesting things about this team to me is the fact that if you look at their 3 best offensive performances this year, and maybe it's just a matter of who they played, but their 3 best offensive performances in conference play, and then you take what I think was their best offensive performance in non-conference play, they've all been on the road. They haven't been that good of an offensive team here at home. How do they turn that around here at Bud Walton Arena? I mean, how do you explain the fact that a team shoots worse in its home arena than they have in road environments?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I don't know that I have an explicit answer or an exact answer for that, because it is kind of a weird little anomaly. But it goes back to what we talked about. I think it was yesterday. All the days kind of run together in my head at this point of the season. But kind of being at home, where, you know, there's been kind of that tension when they weren't playing very well, and, you know, maybe some more pressure on the team to perform, if that makes sense. So maybe that's part of it. But I think, you know, some of it also maybe has to do with, you know, they've, especially in the last couple of games, I think they've really kind of reshuffled their pack, if you will. and kind of, found something that works a little bit better than what they were doing previously. Like we mentioned, Jahnel Davis is, playing as well as he's played in a long, long time, as well as he's played in an Arkansas jersey, that's for sure. Starting to look like his Florida Atlantic self. So I think part of it comes down to the last couple of games. They've kind of reshuffled what they're doing and kind of looking at things with a different lens offensively. And I think maybe part of it does kind of come down to, maybe the added pressure of playing in front of, home fans who aren't happy with the product on the floor, from that 5-game losing streak. So maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's a combination of things, but it's kind of hard to say for sure, like what is happening here or there just with that.
If you've missed it, by the way, Arkansas and Alabama push back 30 minutes tomorrow because and if you ever want a great snapshot of how ESPN owns sports, I'm not talking about just owns the broadcast rights. They own everything about what happens. They have gotten, I don't know, probably six, seven teams to change their plans for tomorrow. A couple had changed their game time. Some, they just changed the network, but it's so they could put the Luka Doncic premiere with the Lakers, or his debut with the Lakers, on ESPN tomorrow afternoon. And so they've got Duke and Clemson, which a lot of people are looking forward to this game because it's Dick Vitale's return to the TV call tomorrow night at Duke. And then they got Arkansas and Alabama both to push their game times back 30 minutes so that the Lakers Pacers game on ESPN tomorrow would have plenty of time to end. But Arkansas now with Alabama, 7:30 tomorrow night on ESPN. Tom Hart and Jimmy Dykes are going to be on the call for this game. So just want to make sure everybody knows it's not 7, it's 7:30 tomorrow night on
Can I make a
ESPN.
comment on the Luka Doncic trade?
What's that?
Can I comment on the Luka Doncic
Sure,
trade?
have at it.
The dumbest trade I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah,
Do you know how bad a trade has to be for like the Mavericks could feasibly win the NBA championship and still the trade would be stupid?
well, here's all you need to know. Now, Jerry Jones is not the least popular GM in Dallas after what the Mavericks did here, sending their superstar away. Everybody, speaking of superstars, everybody knows about Alabama. They know about Mark Sears. They know about Grant Nelson. Who else do they need to know on this roster? Because, you don't get to this point that Alabama's at as a team, as a program, by just having a couple of star players. They've got some good role players around them.
Yeah, no, they're deep, man. They're so good. I think the first name that kind of comes to my mind is Clifford Amori, kind of that their inside presence. He's an elite level rim protector. I think he's certainly top like 90 something percentile in block percentage. I don't have CVB analytics in front of me at the moment, but I mean he's a high level rim protector. He's good in and around the paint, and he kind of fits the Alabama mold, even though he's not really a 3-point threat that you would kind of, I guess, think of when you think of a Nate Oates team, if that makes sense. Then you get a guy like Aiden Holloway, the rare Auburn to Alabama transfer, coming off the bench, kind of playing behind Mark Sears a little bit. He's been a lot of fun to watch. He takes about 25% of their shots, which is kind of crazy for a guy coming off the bench. But I mean, the way he plays, he's a great shooter. Like he gets in and around the mid-range, and he's about a 60% shooter in the 2-point range. And then I think he's a 41% shooter from three as well. So then you get a guy like LeBaron Fylon, who's one of the best freshmen in the country. Darian Reed is awesome, though I'm not sure if he's going to be around for this game or not. I don't remember what his situation is, and maybe that's an indictment on myself. But I mean, they're just so deep. I mean, Chris Youngblood was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think he was, I believe he was co-American Athletic Conference Player of the Year with Jahnel Davis last year. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Don't quote me. But there's everywhere you look on this Alabama team, whether it be in the starting five or down on the bench. Even a guy like Houston Millett, who hasn't really played a ton, is a great shooter. Is somebody who really filled it up last season. I think he was with Pepperdine. So they've got a lot of, and I haven't even mentioned Mo Dibadé. So I mean, everywhere you look is somebody who can hurt you in some different way. But I mean, Obviously, Grant Nelson, Mark Sears, are they going to be the guys you think of right off the bat? Mark Sears was a guy I would have picked for preseason National Player of the Year going into it, and maybe he hasn't lived up to those levels of hype, but I mean, he's still Mark Sears. He was still the guy on a team that went to the Final Four last season. So, I mean, this Alabama team, it's so well-rounded and it's so deep that no matter, you can't really key in on one guy because every person on this roster can hurt you in some different way.
I mean, you look at Sears, he's still averaging 18 points a game. It's not like he's, become chopped liver.
Yeah,
Nelson,
no.
13 points, 8.5 rebounds, averaging at about 1.5 blocks per game. This is a really good Alabama team. I want to ask you about Boogie Fland. He made his return to the bench against Texas the other day. They haven't ruled him out yet officially. The Rothstein tweet is out there that he's out for the season. The program has just said he's out indefinitely. From everything that I've heard, you're looking at a recovery on this type of injury somewhere around 6 to 8 weeks. Now, of course, everybody heals in different ways, and you can't just hold a certain timeline to any one injury. But I mean, do we think that there's a chance that he might have an opportunity to be back with the team? And then just from, you, like I said, you've been around them over the last couple of weeks on the road. Was there anything you noticed him being around the team, like energy level or anything, the other night?
Yeah, you could definitely see that he was just happy to be around the guys again. I mean, speaking from my own experience of being, a very much lower level college athlete and, getting injured and whatnot, I never had anything super serious. I pulled a muscle here and there, but whenever you're, back around the team at practice or at a game, and even if you can't play and you're just around your teammates, your friends, it's always a good time, and I think you could see that he was enjoying just being there. I think you could see that the team enjoyed having him there. He was getting hyped on the bench every time, Jonell Davis or whoever hit a big shot. So you could definitely see that, he was excited to be back. It seemed like everybody was excited that he was back as well. As for whether or not, you would think he would be back, I tried to get I tried to get a confirmation right after the Rothstein tweet from Chuck Martin when he had a midweek Zoom, and he said, "Well, we can't confirm that." But so I guess it's still kind of up in the air. I think they're trying to leave the possibility of a return up in the air, just because I just kind of think that's the way things go from that department. You never want to close the door completely with stuff like that, but. Whether or not he does return, I think it would be interesting to see, like, okay, well, if Boogie Fland is cleared to play, how do they, I guess, shuffle things and kind of re-implement him into the plans because of how well things have worked the last two games. And obviously that's a super small sample size, just two games. But, say they continue to play as well as they've played in those two games, how do you add somebody like Boogie Fland and keep that same level of form? Because if Boogie Fland's healthy, you have to play him just because of how good and how talented he is. How do you put him in there and, get the best out of him while also making sure you're continuing to get the best out of Jonell Davis or DJ Wagner or Zvonimir Visic or Odu Thiro or whoever, just because of how well the team has been playing. So it'd be interesting to see how they would do that. What they could or would do, I'm not sure. There are people who get paid a lot more money than I do to make those kind of decisions. So it would be interesting to see. But yeah, no, do I think he'll be back? I'm not sure. It would be interesting to see how they would handle a return, though.
Anthony, we'll get you here on this. Buying into the theory that a home team gets 5 to 10 points, what do you think Arkansas's got to do well to have a chance to upset Alabama?
I think it starts on the perimeter. Right. I mean, Alabama is obviously going to be a high level, 3-point shooting team, and maybe not as, I guess, efficient as it was last season. I think you can't really allow Alabama, and it kind of goes back to what I said about going into the Kentucky game. So maybe I'll end up being wrong again. But I don't think you can really allow it to be a shootout just because of how efficient and how well Alabama shoots, even though this season it hasn't been necessarily as good from the 3-point line as it has in the past. But you look at I mean, last season it was like, I think it was Alabama was top 20 in 3-point percentage, and this season it's, not really necessarily close to that. But Alabama's gotten a lot of success, inside with Cliff Amore and in the mid-range as well. So you can't give them good looks, which obviously is a lot easier said than done. And then it's 3-point defense. You need to find a way to, get around that, just because, I mean, the 3-point offense for Arkansas the last couple of games has been just, I guess, this newfound weapon that it didn't have previously. Alabama's top 10 in 3-point defense, and you work around that. Maybe this is a game you get Jonas Adu in and get him back to his best, or something along those lines. But I think you can't allow it to be a shootout. But I say that with caution, because I said the same thing going into the Kentucky game, and obviously that that kind of turned into a little bit of a shootout. It wasn't like Kentucky, Florida or anything, but turned into a little bit of that, and Arkansas obviously won. But I think that would be the thing I'm looking at the most is maybe you try to beat them inside. Definitely try to get to the free throw line, because Alabama is not necessarily a team that fouls a lot, but I think you can get there, if that makes sense. But yeah, don't let it become a shootout is, I think, my words of wisdom, even though I'm not sure that they're necessarily all that wise.
Anthony, we appreciate your time. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We want to take and get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. We'll send up source for all Razorback sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Also hope you'll subscribe to our podcast. You can find us on Apple, Spotify. We got a video version on YouTube. We post that each weekday, I should say, to our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can search all those platforms, Whole Hog Sports, and find our latest podcast. When we come back, Ethan Westerman's going to be here in studio with me, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Quick programming note, Bubba Carpenter is going to be here on Monday. It's going to start his two times a week segment with us, and we'll do that throughout baseball season. We'll get him to talk about Razorback baseball, which obviously begins next Friday with the games against Washington State at Baum. And who knows, we may get Bubba to talk about basketball too. You never know what you're going to get out of that guy. But we're looking forward to having Bubba here in studio on Monday. So make sure to tell your friends and check back Monday for Bubba Carpenter here on our podcast. I'm joined now by Ethan Westerman and Arkansas-Alabama tomorrow. There's a buzz around town a little bit about this game that I haven't felt for other games this year. There was a little bit of one Saturday night. I went and took my family to dinner Saturday night, and the place where we went was packed, and it's one of those little local establishments where you know people there when you go sit down, and you shake this guy's hand and this person's hand. And so, people were like walking up to our table, and we were talking about the Arkansas-Kentucky game that was coming up later that night. There was a little bit of a buzz about that, but this is the first home game this year where I've really sensed that football weekend-like excitement around town, and I expect that to build throughout today and then, obviously up to tomorrow's night's game.
Yeah, it's hard for that excitement to build up. A week ago today, we were talking about the third best win of the year was Lipscomb. And it's hard to, whenever you aren't getting, strings of just playing really well back-to-back, at least against competition that gets people excited to see you performing at a high level, it's hard to, generate that type of buzz. beating Kentucky and Texas back-to-back on the road. Like, I don't think entering the season you could tell Arkansas fans, like, if you're saying pick your two-game road stretch to go sweep a couple teams, Kentucky and Texas would be right up there on, like, the ones that they'd want because, you know, of course, hate Texas. And then Kentucky-Arkansas speaks for itself this year. But then I think if you're picking, like, the third team that Arkansas fans would be like, I just want to beat them this year, it's Alabama. It's kind of formed into a little bit of, like, a rivalry over the past few years, especially, I mean, the Musselman versus Oates games were just really entertaining. I think that you're on a stretch right now where it's fans, you're playing teams that fans really want to beat, and Arkansas is coming off a couple wins that really, quite frankly, proved a lot of people wrong that they still have some life to them. All of a sudden, you go from a team that nobody's really excited about to all of a sudden, this town is kind of ready to get behind them.
It's interesting you said that Randy Rainwater and Rick Schaefer have a, you know, a Dry Time Sports show, and every week they have Nolan Richardson on. And last night was Nolan's hour-long segment, and I listened to a good bit of that. And he said the two teams that I always wanted to beat worse were Texas when they were in the Southwest Conference and Kentucky whenever they moved to the SEC. And he said, and then the third team was always Alabama. And so it's funny how you said that. And here you've got Nolan Richardson who lived this for years and years and years. And those were the three teams that stood out to him too.
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals where you – in the first year, John Calipari, of course, lofty expectations. Everybody, you know, gets Final Four in their mind, like just by the hire, I mean, and the talent coming in. But it's one of those years where who knows where it ends up. But if you're able to go on and sweep those three teams, there's something at the end of the year, no matter how it goes, that you look back on pretty fondly.
I think that was a fun week.
Yeah, I mean, the five-day stretch that they had between going and beating Kentucky on the road and then Texas really just revived the season a little bit. And it's funny because on the reverse side for Kentucky, no matter how their season ends, there's now a black eye on it. That, I mean, unless they were to go on and just do something crazy, make a deep run, like this season will have that black eye on it for Kentucky fans for the rest of, you know, up until next season.
A black eye and a bloody hand, and we'll talk about that here in just a second. Nate Oates, Alabama coach, he had his radio show the other night. Now, this clip comes before Arkansas defeated Texas. Oates' radio show was on Monday night. But this does have some thoughts from him about Arkansas beating Kentucky. He hasn't had a press conference this week. I think he might have one scheduled for today before they fly out of Tuscaloosa. But here's some thoughts from him on Monday night, pre-Texas victory from Arkansas, about the Razorbacks.
Give us a little preview of the Hogs.
I mean, they're really talented. You know, Calipari is one of the best recruiters in the history of the sport. So, you know, he's going to have a talented roster. And, you know, for whatever reason, they just hadn't seemed to mesh as well as, you know, what people had thought maybe coming into that. But, you know, Cal's a master motivator. They went back into Rupp where he coached. I think those guys want to play for him. I think they showed that night and Rupp, like, you know, there's something to be said for kind of having your coaches back, walking into a place that kind of run him out, and they had his back. I mean, they played hard. They were the hardest playing team out there. That was the best they'd looked all year. So I hope they revert back to what they looked like before that when we play them at their place. But you know, they might have got woke up. They might have realized what their potential is, how good they can be, and we may end up seeing the best version of them. And if that's the case, that's the case. You know, we're going to have to beat good teams no matter where they're at and whether they're playing their best, not their best. We got to beat good teams. So, you know, they certainly looked a lot better Saturday night than what they looked in some previous games, though.
Nate Oates on his radio show earlier this week. Don't you always love those radio shows when you got all the noise going on in the background, the forks are clanging and the plates. And
the coaches are just more relaxed, which is great.
It's interesting. His show, he's only on there for like one segment. They've got all these segments for, you know, 40, 45 minutes, and then finally here's Nate Oates. Yeah. Thanks for hanging around.
And the funny thing about it, too, is it's like these shows, just it's so unique to college that it's like a part of the game. I don't know. Yeah. Just the every SEC school has their restaurant in town that the coach goes to. And
Baumhauer's there.
Yeah, well, and I love it because Calipari.
That's where Hugh Freeze goes, too, in Auburn.
Oh, really?
Who could forget that?
Oh, goodness. forgot about that for a second. But, no, it's funny because even like, you know, talking about coaches being relaxed, Calipari's about the most like just going to be polished guy in the world with his interviews. He's even like, you can sense more relaxation from him at these even. Like, it's still the same Calipari that you're kind of hearing a lot of the same stuff, but it's in a more relaxed tone. And I mean, he's the one that, what was he saying last week about the bazooka holes?
Yeah, he said, I've got bazooka holes all over my body.
Yeah, that was a radio show debut, I think, was that little phrase. So these are fun to watch. And I think Nate Oates is one of those coaches that, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to me like something he wants to be doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get that sense too, but it's like almost like, oh, I'm here, so I'm just going to kind of, you know, and I guess make the most of it while I am.
Yeah, that's a good point that you make about how it's very unique to college. Like, you don't see Greg Popovich showing up to the local Tex-Mex establishment in San Antonio and or anything like
or,
that.
Or, I mean, Mike Gundy going to a nursing home in Stillwater is about the most awesome thing ever.
That's great. That is a great one. You know, Oates, he's one of those coaches that if you're Alabama, you want to keep him forever. But he's also one of those coaches that you wonder, and I think Chris Beard is also in this in this conversation too, maybe Golden at Florida, even though Florida's a little bit better basketball job than I think Alabama or Ole Miss are. Like, you wonder, let's say North Carolina comes open at the end of this year, which a lot of people think that could happen because Hubert Davis is in hot water there. Are these schools able to hang on if a North Carolina comes calling or – there aren't, and this isn't to say there are very many jobs like North Carolina, because there are not. I'd say that's probably one of the top 5-6 jobs in college basketball. Indiana may come open at the end of the season. There were reports yesterday that their coach is looking at stepping down at the end of the year. If one of these big-time jobs comes open, do you think that schools like Alabama or like Ole Miss can keep these coaches who you know are going to be at the top of the list?
There's kind of two sides to this. On one hand, I think that SEC coaches really value in like how much the conference is investing in the sport. It's so good right now. But then you flip that around, you could go to a North Carolina right now where it's pretty down in the ACC. And if you're a Nate Oates or somebody, I mean, you could probably go and kick some butt.
You can turn it around right away.
Yeah. And life is hard in the SEC, like right now, to keep a program being so good. And they've done it. Like Nate Oates, but he's done at Alabama, has been pretty remarkable. So, you know, it'd be hard to envision them not at least hearing it out. But who knows? There's a lot to be said about, you know, once you've built a program up like how he's done, and is that now all of a sudden a job that, you know, it's easier to keep what you have going on than try and start over somewhere else. But I would say that because of the strength of the SEC, it's probably harder to maintain it than it is to go somewhere else like UNC or Indiana. I mean, the Big Ten's a little bit better than the ACC this year, but it's just, I guess you got to view pros and cons.
I haven't been able to get the thought of Chris Beard to UNC out of my head. It's been there for a month. It just seems like he's the type that could go in there and win right away. But Oates would be another one.
Yeah, and I mean, Beard is the type, I don't ever expect to see him someplace for a long time.
No.
I mean, of course, his stop at Texas, that was kind of the forever job if he could keep it. But after that, I mean, you're like, I just think he's about to be one of those that kind of bounce around, best job at the time.
So speaking of SEC basketball coaches, you saw this yesterday because I sent it to you, where Mark Pope, whenever he was speaking to reporters after they lost to Ole Miss the other night, he had a cut on his hand. And I guess he had a little bit of blood on a white shirt that he was wearing. People were like, what's going on there? And I guess he said that they broke some furniture at halftime of their game at Ole Miss, that he got kind of fired up. And he didn't say that he's the one who broke the furniture, but he did acknowledge, yes, I had blood on my hand, and yes, there was some furniture broken.
Yeah.
And I think everybody's kind of putting two and two together and figuring this out. Things aren't going well at Kentucky, at least this week. And we talked about, when they lose to Arkansas, and they're 1-4 in their last five, now the honeymoon's over, and he's starting to realize what the pressures are of being a coach in that job.
Yeah, one of the funniest things about the end of the Arkansas-Kentucky game was listening to Matt Zimmerman on the radio, because he was just acknowledging, like, Zimmerman was taking it all in. Whenever they had that technical foul review that took forever. Z was just like, this is awesome. We get more time to just sit here and soak it in, watch I'm leaving, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, this is where it really starts for Kentucky. Like, welcome to adversity. Like, yeah. This is the first, like, you're at crossroads kind of with your fan base right now because they really wanted that one. And let me tell you, I thought we might see a version of Kentucky against Ole Miss that came out fired up, ready to get that out of their mouth. And they were shell-shocked at mm-hmm. Ole Miss. I mean, that score ended up being a 14-point loss. Kentucky made it interesting in the second half, but they were down big at halftime. They
scored like 51 after halftime. Yeah, and made it a little bit of a game, but not much.
They cannot guard right now is the thing. They cannot defend. And granted, Ole Miss was throwing everything in the hoop. I mean, it was crazy the shots they were making. But Kentucky is really struggling to defend. And I'm one to say once all these teams start having their best shooting performance against you, you are to blame. Like, if there's a trend there, like, come on now. Like, do we really think that they're just getting – everybody's getting lucky against you? So
Florida, Alabama, Arkansas, Ole Miss, they've all had some of their best games of the season offensively against Kentucky. You know, on the radio show the other day, the quote was from Pope. So they take calls. And I always think it's kind of funny how coaches take calls because this could backfire.
Go wild.
But he took a call and they asked him about the blow in his hand. He just said, quote, we have a really high standard at the University of Kentucky and we're not playing to that standard. So it made me think, and I sent you this video clip and we've got it pulled up right here. Mark Pope and John Pelfrey both played for Rick Pitino. Remember this famous John Pelfrey clip?
Oh, here we go.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed. And just bleed.
That was the most bizarre press conference I've ever been to. I was there. That was on...
you went to the John L. Smith one, too.
I was at the Smile press conference. But that one wasn't as bizarre as Pelfrey. Pelfrey just got up there and just... It was just a total stream of consciousness for probably 20 minutes. I remember he starts out, he goes... And it was either on Valentine's Day or I think it might have been the day or 2 days before Valentine's Day. And he starts out, he goes, I've been thinking about bread and... Valentine's Day is coming up, and it reminds me I need to get roses for my wife. And then it just this red just keeps growing and growing and growing until he gets to just bleed.
Yeah, well, there is a
Pope gives me some Pelfrey vibes.
There's definitely a little parallel there too. This went through my head too. I was a former manager on a basketball team, and I went on road trips, and you pack the stools that you know the team once you get to the timeout. Set them around, they sit down. But I'm like, what other furniture? Did we ever bring furniture on a road trip? Unless things have changed where teams are hauling furniture around. Like,
and how do you break furniture?
Whose furniture did he break? Did they vandalize Ole Miss?
Is he like karate chopping a table or something? I don't know.
But I'm like, surely this furniture that was broken, unless it was one of the stools that you brought or something like that, like, did Ole Miss, are they down a couch now? Like, what happened there? I just really want to see the scene. And, like, I don't know. It's just wild to me that at halftime of that game, somewhere in the bowels of, what's the new arena there?
The pavilion.
The pavilion. There was furniture being broken and blood being spewed. It's just crazy to me that happened. But I guess I don't have much more to say about this. It's really... I'm confused by it.
I miss the Tad Pad at Ole Miss. They don't. Hey. They've got this nice.
Mississippi State still has the hump.
They've got the hump, and they're very, very proud of it. All right, we're gonna do something fun here. We've got our best and worst of the week. We're gonna start doing this on Fridays. The best thing that we saw this week, the worst thing that we saw this week, and let's start. Who are we starting with, Sydney? Are we starting with mine? Or are we starting with Ethan's?
We're starting with yours.
Okay. Well, so we're going to start with mine. This is the best thing I saw this week. So the Pro Football Hall of Fame announcements word leaked this week of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And used to David Baker, who was this big old man. I mean, he was like 6'10", 350 or something. And he'd go around to – and they would have everybody sit in a hotel room. And if you heard this, you knew that was the knock at the door and you were going to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he'd come and he'd hold your hand and he'd tell you, your legacy is going to live forever. They don't do that anymore. David Baker's not with the Pro Football Hall of Fame anymore. And so now they've gotten a little bit more creative in how they're letting people know. This was the best one that I saw this week, though. This was Sterling Sharp, the great receiver for the Green Bay Packers in the 90s, being informed by his brother Shannon, who's already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, that he was going into the Hall of Fame. And we've got this clip right here.
What y'all got going on here?
Welcome, bro.
To your house?
Pro Football Hall of Fame, class of 2025. Myself, I wouldn't.
This is something Oh wow, man! I need a seat and a drink.
This is a great.
I need grandma.
This is a great video here. We pulled that off of Twitter. I think it was posted by the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They're the first set of brothers who have gone into the Pro Football Hall of Fame together. And there's so if you're just listening to us and you don't see the video is Sterling Sharp coming down the stairs into Shannon Sharp's man cave basement. Did you see the this was kind of just funny to me. There's a picture in Shannon Sharp's basement of him with his shirt off. Oh. Like some sort of modeling type photo. And he's standing in front of that as he's telling his brother he's going in to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I just there are no pictures of
Shannon Sharp. Right,
do you have pictures of you with your shirt off in your
house? No. Shannon Sharp has had some very interesting moments in the past half year, and I will leave it at that.
Yeah, we won't go into any more of that. But anyway, it is, and the video's great because Shannon gets emotional, and he's talking about they grew up in this real small house together, and that, you know, Sterling is his older brother, and that's, he said, I had an example to look to, and you didn't have that example. He said, so it was way harder for you to make it to the Hall of Fame than it was for me. Great video. I love those types of things.
Yeah, it's. I like a video that makes me feel good inside. Hopefully we have more bests of this week than worst of, because I like whenever things make me happy.
All right, so what's your best of?
I don't know. What does Sydney have up first for me? I sent her three bests of, and I have a worst of, but I didn't send a clip.
Okay.
Oh, I have your first worst pulled
up. Oh, you've got my worst pulled
up?
Yeah. Okay. So
we're just going to go in order.
Okay, I got it. Okay, so this is my first. I've got two worst of the weeks. The first one is this kid at UMass. Play this video, Sydney, and we'll discuss it. It's at a UMass women's basketball game. So he makes this half-court shot to win, and this is one of those deals where you've got 30 seconds to make a layup, a free throw, a three-pointer, and a half-court shot, and he won $10,000. The insurance company that backs the sponsor of this event said they were not giving him the $10,000 because his foot was on the line at half-court, and the rules specifically said that they had to be behind the half-court line.
All you can do is shake your head and feel bad. I mean, that's, let's not be petty. Let's not have instant replay on a half-court challenge. Let's just, for the integrity of the game, say it was half-court. Like, let's just not go back and, I don't know. Like, we don't go to instant replay until under 2 minutes for things. I mean, I guess they do on if your foot was on the three-point line, but this is a contest.
Yeah, I mean, this is silly.
This is very silly. Ridiculous.
Something like this happened at Bud Walton one time, and like kind of a similar deal, a technicality, and a guy who had hit a shot didn't get to get the money. And I mean, the crowd was just giving it to Arkansas because, you know, whoever their guy was at the time, he came out, no. Anyway, and Frank was sitting, you know, the way they used to is Frank would sit at media row. They had two rows of media tables on the sideline. And Frank gets up and he starts booing too. And I think the guy ended up getting something out of it. But it's just Frank knew how to read the room.
All I'm going to say is instant replay should not exist on contests like that.
All right. So here's my third worst of the week. And if you are on social media, you probably see this one. This is a TikTok video from somebody named Money Penny Edits.
This is worst of the week?
It's really bad.
Maybe it's in the I
think it's a. I was. I this crossed my mind of this a best of the week.
Okay, so I mean, okay, whatever. This is a song that somebody made after Calipari beat Kentucky. We're gonna have to bleep a word out of here too, I think.
So Matt Jones sent me off to
the other Matt Jones,
and I left and took all my dogs. Ran me out town, said I was a clown. Now, only thing them cats can do is score.
go into videos like that ready to cringe, and this person actually did a great job. Like, I thought it was awesome. This was a best of the week for me.
People have so much time on their hands.
Who knows if it was... Was this AI? I've heard some AI clips recently of...
We have. That's for sure. Yeah, this was... This is just something of the week. I don't know if it was worse. It was...
Side note, we had a Hogs Illustrated Sports Club yesterday that Logan Forsythe...
Which we're going to play the interview.
Yeah. And I fully expected Chip Souza to play this clip to start off the... It was the most, like...
Oh, this video?
I was like, if Chip gets his hands on this, this is first thing we're doing. Chip loves a song like that. He played the Rocky Top thing whenever football beat.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Beat them. So.
All right.
John Calipari was at that luncheon and listened to that song.
That's right. That was that day. Yep. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Okay. What we got pulled up here, Sydney?
This is one of my best of the week. I will give you a spoken worst of the week, but this is one of my best of the week. This is John Calipari on the Razorback Sports Network radio show after beating Kentucky. Just listen to this.
I said to ESPN at halftime, kids are fighting, they're playing defense, and that I love coaching this team.
I love this team.
The love took me out. The love absolutely took me out. I was dying laughing. I actually had to keep it together because I'm recording this so we can have the audio, but internally I was dying. I love this team. That's one of my best of the week.
All right, what else you got?
I guess what's up next on the docket? I think this is probably my next favorite might be it's from the same game. It's a clip of Calipari to SEC to Alyssa Lang afterward with Billy Richmond in the back.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my best of the week.
Coach, congratulations on the win. You challenged your team to play fearless. How would you evaluate that fearlessness tonight?
Hey, we're fearless. Now, we've been in, like, there are two or three games that we should have been able to finish. We played with more confidence because they played fearless. And I was coaching that way. And so, proud of them. Good win on the road. Hard game to win in this building. I've been here. So it's a hard game to win.
The three guys who followed you to Fayetteville combined for over 50 points tonight. What did you think of their composure in this game?
Billy! They played good.
All right, roll it, Sydney, roll it back a tiny bit and just freeze the frame on Calipari's face after he got done yelling at Billy.
You can see, by the way, you can see a flash go off as he's doing this. That's our photographer, Hank Layton. And we've got this on our site. We've got a story about how they've got 1.94 million people who watch this, and it's the picture of Alyssa Lang interviewing Calipari and the flash going off.
It's so funny. I love the still shot of him just... That's his face whenever having to yell at Billy for.
Come on.
The fans were chirping with them, and I think they said something back. And Cal, he's not a fan of he likes a good, classy, get out of there. And Billy said something back. Anyway, that's one of my best of.
Okay, so it's not getting any better than that. Your best. That's got to be your absolute best.
No. Best of the week is Fairfield.
Oh, you think this is better?
Oh, yeah. Fairfield versus Marist. This is Anthony Christensen special, like, to be watching this game. I was not watching it. I just saw this replay. But Deion Perry for Fairfield has the ball. It's a tie ball game. They inbound it on the baseline with I don't even remember how many seconds are left. But watch this shot.
From 70 for the win.
That's good! Oh.
Deion Perry!
And look at the records of those teams.
Marist pretty good, Fairfield not.
Yeah, talk about a spoiler. We love a good 3/4 court spoiler in the MAAC.
There was a similar one like that the other night. I can't remember who they were playing. It was New Orleans and somebody, hit a long shot to win it.
Yeah, real quick.
It's amazing how many of these that you see nowadays. Like, maybe it's just because we've got so much video. I don't know.
So okay. the conference that, you know, I think Toledo and Bowling Green are in, what's that?
The MAC.
Now, what is this conference that Fairfield and
the MAAC?
No, I want to hear you.
The MAAC. Is that what you want me to say?
Yes. I love hearing people try and pronounce this conference because they all end up sounding like a goat or something or a sheep.
All right, real quick, your worst of the week.
Worst of the week. I don't have a video. I just can talk about it. The Grammys. I don't really watch these normally, but I like Billie Eilish. I think she's cool, and I thought she should have won an award, and she didn't. And tears started swelling up in her eyes. And I don't normally, for celebrities, feel bad for them ever. Maybe that says more about me. But something about her teary eyes after not winning a Grammy, it was my worst of the week. I don't like seeing people sad. So,
I guess. Billie Eilish?
Yes, Billie Eilish.
Okay.
I like her music.
Okay. Well, so. You've got us on a down note here.
Yeah.
We'll try to pick you back up.
I should have ended on the 3/4 court.
You should have.
Buzzer beater.
You should have.
Yep.
All right. When we come back, Chip Souza's Q&A with Logan Forsythe at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to play this interview with Logan Forsythe from the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club yesterday. In just a moment, I want to tell you that Courtney Dyfel is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. That'll be Wednesday, February 26th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com for Courtney Dyfel, the head coach of Arkansas softball, who won their season opener yesterday in San Marcos 3-1. Over Texas State. You can go to our website, wholehogsports.com, to read the recap of that game. Now, our Q&A with Chip Souza and Razorback baseball great Logan Forsythe at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
So a lot of people who are not around baseball don't know, you know, they just see you go to the games and they think it's all about games, but baseball has a lot of downtime. There's a lot of downtime when you're in the locker room with guys or you're sitting in the dugout or whatever. Tell me some of your favorite memories from playing at Arkansas. And that doesn't have to be on the field, but maybe off the field. Any funny things or whatever?
I got one right now. I had two buddies, Danny Hamlin, which I'm sure some of you remember, home run guy. What do we call him? The Hammer?
The Hammer.
The Hammer. And then one of my buddy from Philly, Matt Willard. So we still talk about this to the day. So we would, after every game, and I think this is missed so much in sports now, but after every game, we would sit there in the locker room, have our recovery drinks, and we would just talk about what happened.
Yeah.
Who we faced, who came in the bullpen, who could potentially come back later in the series, how so-and-so did, how does this look, if there was like a teammate that would, you know, that was kind of concerning, like how do we approach this? So we, after every game, just us three would just sit there until Mark would come in, and Mark would say, he's like, I need your pants, boys. So we would strip down, and that's when we would jump in the shower and make our way. But that's probably the most vivid memory I have of that time at Arkansas.
You know, and being involved in sport for so long, high school, college, pro, how do you kind of separate yourself from that now? Because you know that camaraderie with teammates, it's hard to duplicate that in anything else after you get done playing, I would imagine.
It is. I mean, it does get lonely a little bit, but I, like we were kind of talking earlier, like I was fortunate enough to have some success. So this phase of my life, I'm able to be more of a dad. I'm able to be more of a coach without having to sacrifice for job or time away, or you know, trying to get a little bit further ahead in whatever you know job I'm doing. So at times I take that for granted, but it is a nice reminder to be able to go help a kid figure something out if I'm able to, like be able to go do these type of luncheons, be able to go, you know, talk to younger kids, especially like high school, college kids, and maybe give them a direction, or if they're struggling with something, it's like, it is a big deal to them at this moment in their life, but to try to allow them to zoom out a little bit more and kind of see things in a different perspective, like I've enjoyed getting to do that.
Ashley was a soccer player here.
Mm-hmm.
You were a baseball player. Who's a better athlete, her or you?
I'm gonna say Allie's a better athlete. She thought, I mean, she's always, she was fast, she was quick, she's mean. And on the soccer field, she's the sweetest person in the world. Yeah. You meet her in real life. And but she thought she could race me one time. She was like, I bet I could beat you in a race. I was like, don't challenge me to a race. I was like, you haven't played soccer in a few years, and I'm still playing. Like,
yeah.
So I beat her in a race, and she's never asked to race again.
Well, she just let you win.
She probably did.
There you go. Dave Van Horn influence in your career and in your life. How much influence has he continued to have with you?
No, not continued. I would say early on in my career, like, Dave was definitely a role model for me. I very much enjoyed how he carried himself. And he was a guy that I enjoyed looking up to. And when I said, you know, kind of like that people-pleasing kind of mentality where it's like I didn't want to make Coach mad. But also wanted to show Coach that I could do it. And so through my career, he's been there. I came back like my first three off seasons to train, and got to know him a little bit better. Our relationship grew up a little bit, but then once you get into the MLB, it's just the schedule is, it doesn't really allow for them to come out, or I mean, I guess he could have come watch me play a little bit more, but I would make it a point every time we came up here to go say hello, just to say thanks, pretty much. Appreciate you giving me an opportunity. Appreciate you letting me stay at Arkansas. And he kind of helped walk me through the draft a little bit. So yeah, he was very helpful.
You and James McCann didn't play together at Arkansas, but you guys have since kind of gotten together and work out together and that kind of thing. How did that relationship kind of come to be and you know, kind of working out together, I guess, in Nashville?
Yeah. That relationship came together in Nashville. I knew most of the players that came after me at Arkansas, and I would follow with the program. I'd see where they're at, check the draft status, see where they're going to go. It's really fun, you know, yelling woo pig across. Like, I did it to Moyer and Fenway, and Benintendi had just gotten up. And I'm like, what's up, Ryan? You're back. And he's like, I was like, loosen up, kid. You're good. But no, James and I, he was shortly after I was, had a great career. He's still going. He had moved to Nashville, and he had gotten in touch with me. He's like, what do you guys do? I said, come with me. And so I brought him up, showed him what we worked out, kind of got him into the, you know, the building, and got him the schedule. You know, I was like, show up and that's what we do. And James, as hard as a worker as he is, as soon as he was one of those guys that he's just accountable. You know, it's like, if I show up, I know he's going to be here. And if he shows up, he knows I'm going to be there. So it was nice to have a training partner like that for a few years. We hit together, worked out, all that stuff.
So you're with the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
You guys played the Astros.
Yep.
World Series. Trash can beating.
Yes.
What do you remember about that, and what are your thoughts on that?
I remember a lot about the World Series. The whole trash can cheating, all that. I mean, it's true, but we didn't understand at the time. So from my perspective on the field, the Dodgers team that year, we were such a complete team. I mean, from the bullpen to the arms to just like how we could go through a lineup with that, you know, pass the baton, next guy up mentality, where it's like anybody in the lineup could hit one out. Anybody in the lineup could, you know, get the big hit. But we kind of checked those egos at the door, and we did a really good job of that, of doing that more days than not. And if I needed to take a walk to let another guy get up, then I took my walk. Like, we weren't trying to create things. We had a game plan, and we stuck to it extremely well. But the thing that was, in saying all that, the thing that was the most frustrating is that we could manufacture a run with a walk or a base hit or a double or then another walk. We might do that, and then Houston would come up and take a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and hit it over the fence, like the first two pitches. And I was like, what is going on?
How do they know what's going
on? I was like, And it's not, there's not, you know, the guys they're hitting the homers off of, it's not a straight 100. Like, I mean, this, like, it cuts their rise. Like, there are different ways that they had started to get creative with this. And you just don't, guys that would never get teed off like that in season, and then it just kind of happened multiple times during the series, you kind of, like, cranked your head a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like they knew what was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. You played a lot of years in MLB. What's some of your favorite cities or ballparks to play in that you played in?
Oh, man. I enjoyed most of the cities I went to, I enjoyed. I really liked Seattle. The West Coast trips were fun. East Coast trips were fun. Staying around, like, you know, the Midwest and, you know, places like Kansas City, St. Louis, Atlanta, I got to see my friends and family from home. So that's when I was excited when we got to go play kind of in the Central Divisions, because I had a chance to, like, see some family. But most of the cities were a lot of fun. I enjoyed the cities where you could, like, jump on one of the scooters and just kind of, like, cruise to the field and stop and grab a local coffee or, you know, grab some breakfast or something like that. It was cool to check out the cities that way. Chicago is probably my favorite big city. That's right. And I did like New York, or like at least where we were in New York. But New York's clubhouse probably had the best visiting clubhouse as far as food and
Yankees or Mets.
Yankees. Yeah. And then one of my favorite skylines was Pittsburgh at night. And then some of my favorite fields were on the West Coast. Just weather helps with that. But one of my favorites, I got lucky with my stops. San Diego was beautiful. We got to walk everywhere. Tampa, we were down in St. Pete, and it was just a great spot. And then I think Texas is probably the only one that was like, we were in a neighborhood. That just felt a little bit different than all these other teams that I was with.
Pittsburgh's got the most beautiful baseball park out there. I mean, the downtown with the, you know, all that, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, with Clemente's Bridge.
Who was maybe a pitcher, you know, that you were going to face in MLB where you're like, God, I hate that guy. Hate that guy. He seems to have my number. I hate that guy.
I had a lot of them. Tim Hudson. Hudson played for Atlanta when he was, I think, in his prime to San Francisco when he was still in his prime, and I was in San Diego. So he was the veteran, and he just out ratted me every single time. Like, if I was, you know, if I'm thinking a way to, like, come back, like, he would X factor me back on the inside. But then you take a guy like Roy Halladay, and who is just immaculate.
Yeah.
And, like, I had success off of him. Don't know how. Just close my eyes and swing. But Hudson, I for some reason, in San Francisco, when I was, and it might have been because I was a rookie, but he just, like, I could not figure him out.
So you got a little bit of the broadcasting last year. Is that something you think you might want to pursue a little bit? Or did you enjoy that? Or
I mean, if the fans enjoy it, I mean, I did enjoy it. I love talking baseball. The game just makes sense to me. And I see the game within the game. I see the chess match that's being played. And a lot of that contributes to, like, my time as a bench guy, like role guy early. Like, I heard so many different philosophies. I talked to so many Hall of Famers and coaches about their approach to a game, what they would look for. And then I talked to the guys that were the nerds in the video room that just studied and studied and studied. And I was like, what's your process? How do you do this? So I picked up a lot about baseball and a lot of different ways of how to look at the game, which for me was like, well, what else am I going to do? You know, am I just going to sit on the bench and enjoy all this big league spread and not take advantage? So luckily I had some veterans that, like, kind of helped me get on track with that, but then I just kind of adopted it and loved it. So, like, taking it to the broadcast booth, it was fun. I didn't expect to do, like, the whole game, but I did. And it felt like it went okay, but I haven't really heard much back from them. I think that's just going to be kind of, I'm an option if they need me, and I'd love to do it again.
You have a son, you mentioned he's 8, you're coaching him now. What's that like? And, you know, a lot of times people who played at a high level or some high level like you did have a hard time, you know, communicating, you know, to that, to that age kid, but what do you do that's kind of helping you with that communication with not just him, but other
lower expectations.
Yeah.
You need to lower your expectations.
First learn to tie your shoes.
Yes. Lower your expectations for your young ones trying to play a sport. Like we talked about earlier, like I think travel ball has become saturated. I think that the competition is very similar to, you just have a bunch of the more along kids than you do the kids right now that are still trying to figure out the game. And I think, not to harp, the toughest thing I think is how quick I am to see what's happening in the game or with any sport that I played at a higher level, and wanting them to make that adjustment. And I think I kind of got a crash course in that last year when I was trying to help two teams. I had one team that was further along than the other team, and so I'm trying to figure out how this younger team, this team that's just very, they're just out there, neighborhood friends, like we want to just play baseball, and having to like switch that on and off as a coach. And like Coach was saying, the biggest thing is that like if I can make more of an impact for them and teach them something outside of the game, where it might be a little bit more responsibility, might be a little bit more ownership, might be a little bit more discipline or consistency. Like, those are things that I try to preach when I'm with these young kids. And it's like, I don't harp on it. I'm not giving them a lesson. But like, that's terminology that they're always hearing that I think will pay off later down the road with anything they do. But yeah, my expectations were a little high at first. And that has come down a lot, especially after that first season in travel ball. I was like, these people are crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Logan Forsythe.
Well, hey, we hope you enjoyed our Q&A with Logan Forsythe at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Again, if you want to visit our sports club, you can find tickets at OzarksTix.com for Courtney Dyfel on February 26th. That's a Wednesday coming up here at the end of the month with the Arkansas softball coach, Courtney Dyfel. We appreciate you being with us today on our podcast. Hope we'll see you at our website throughout the weekend. We'll have plenty of coverage, not only from Arkansas, Alabama over at Bud Walton Arena, but also from Razorback baseball scrimmages at Baumwalker Stadium. Final weekend of preseason scrimmaging before opening day next week. Lots of content at our website this weekend, wholehogsports.com. Hope we see you there, or that we see you Monday here on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.